Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Good to have you company for another hour of dementia talk and music here on the D Word. I'm always glad to hear from people who want to tell their story on the show. And this week, my guest is Andy Woodhead, who received a dementia diagnosis in his 50s, but has certainly not let him stop making a great contribution to research and advocacy, not only in his native Wales, but worldwide. Andy will be joining me right after this from Vince Gill.
'63. Oh, swinging doors ain't swinging. They ain't singing about cheating. These old honky tonks ain't nothing like they used to be. And these days, what they call dancing ain't even close to old to stepping. They used to hold partner to close in time. And I miss the smell of smoking and the sound of long necks opening, the taste of getting stoned on cheap red wine. These old honky tonks ain't nothing like they used to be. Country like back in '63. Oh, swinging doors ain't swinging. They ain't singing about cheating. These old honky tonks ain't nothing like they used to be.
Vince Gill, nothing like they used to be. Kicking off this week's show, well, my guest is Andy Woodhead. Andy, a warm welcome to the D Word. Great to have you here as my guest. Plenty to talk about, especially what's been going on, the really positive things that have been going on in Wales. But, you know, before we get into that, can you just give us a brief story behind, you know, you yourself? You were diagnosed at the age of 55, weren't you?
I was. It was a very early diagnosis. I was actually being investigated for Parkinson's disease. So I hadn't even gone with any dementia symptoms. And I was taken into hospital, had a number of tests, probably more than most people would have or need, like MRIs and CT scans, and also a lumbar punch, simply because they were looking for Parkinson's. And it was a case of good news, bad news. I didn't have Parkinson's, but I had lesions on my brain, which suggested that I might be developing vascular dementia. My problem has really been, as with most people who have vascular dementia, TIAs, transient ischemic attacks, which are mini strokes, basically. I had one major stroke, which I recovered from, but subsequently I was having TIAs. I feel that it's something that I can do externally, if you like, without medication to help myself, i.e. exercise, a good diet. I've given up alcohol, not that I drank very much anyway, and I've never smoked. So, but they're all the ones that you've got to, and exercise is important. And obviously remaining in social environments is very important. And I say they're the sort of things that I do without taking drugs, but clearly I have to take things to control my blood pressure, which is vital. High blood pressure will cause a TIA, so I've got to remember to take the blood pressure medication. And also I'm a type 2 diabetic, so I have to remember to take my diabetic medication, because again, there is a risk factor with diabetes. I wouldn't want to overstate it, but it is recognised that it is one of the risk factors. I gave up work pretty shortly after that. I worked for a European, I was a director of a European multinational company, travelling all over Europe, so it was quite an onerous job. My background, I have a PhD. I worked up to a PhD in European law, I spent a lot of my life studying, as you can imagine, and I did two master's degrees after I graduated with a social science degree to start off with. So research and academia have really been a big part of my life, as much as my my job, which is why I am continuing with research now. I had four publications last year, one in palliative medicine, and I've just had another, which was good news last week. We just had another in palliative medicine, publication. It's become something that it's a new sort of interest of mine, palliative care, particularly for people with dementia, which I think is so often taken for granted and overlooked, and needs to be highlighted, which is why I really decided to take part in the first study, which was with King's College Hospital in London. We did a five-year study on palliative care at home. I have to say the results weren't great. It was a study that was financed by the Cicely Saunders or working with the Cicely Sanders Institute, and it was Marie Curie that financed the 5-year study. And as I say, we got a lot out of that in terms of the improvements that can be made. Things like dedicated phone lines for people who are receiving palliative care, because at the moment, all they have, if they have a your carer has an emergency, is a telephone line where you get triaged, and then you talk to a nurse, and then you talk to a doctor, and the whole process can take a couple of hours. I wrote an article with a colleague from King's College asking if we could have a dedicated phone line for people who were receiving palliative care, so that they went straight through to a doctor rather than having to be triaged and then evaluated by a nurse. If you're receiving palliative care, clearly everything that happens is going to be serious, so the triage stage is unnecessary. That was obviously quite interesting. And the latest study has been the issue of loneliness at the end of life, which will affect anyone who is receiving palliative care, even with a dozen people sat around them and people caring for them. Without the right sort of support, which could be spiritual or social, depending on the individual, but coming from the right people with the right advice, you can overcome those sorts of issues. So that's been equally interesting. But yeah, I gave up work and was bored. So after 2 years of sort of doing what most people do post-diagnosis, there was no help then. When I was first diagnosed, there was no post-diagnostic counselling, so I had to come home really and do my own research, which was via Google. And anyone who researches on Google with any diagnosis, whether it's dementia or anything else, my advice would be don't Google, because Google always gives you the worst of scenarios. However, having said that, I know that everyone who is listening will someday get a diagnosis, only want to look it up on Google. So they will do that. But I think it's best to talk to your primary carer before you start Googling things. I had no choice when I did it. As I say, there was no counselling, which there is now, and it is vital because people don't understand. A dementia diagnosis is like any other diagnosis of a terminal illness. The only thing is, you don't get a prognosis because everybody with dementia is different. That's not because there are over 100 different types of dementia. It's simply because we're all different. We all live different lifestyles. And, I know someone with Alzheimer's who has had it for 20 years and is still writing dementia diaries. You can't give straight answers, if you like, to those questions. But I'm a great advocate, as I said at the beginning, of doing things to help ourselves, which is to do with lifestyle issues. And it's something that Wales, the NHS in Wales in particular, and England too, have been working on to try and get the information out there on the internet, and in hard copy, for specifically for carers, so that they receive the right sorts of advice about how to deal with someone who's losing their appetite or isn't drinking, which are the sort of the worst stage scenarios. But you don't get there quickly if you can take care of yourself before that, perhaps. which I think is it's vital information.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Keep rolling away from me. melted, white's worn off. All that's left to me lies in this field. And there's work to be done underneath that burning sun. Something to remind me how to feel. And this tractor, it starts, could use a few new parts. The only thing this land has ever known. Every spring I'm reminded, winter cold is blinded. When the white is gold, the grass still grows.
Rolling from Clay Street Unit there on UK Health Radio. Well, we've got over 40 shows covering every aspect of health available for listen again and download from the website at UKHealthRadio.com. This week I'm chatting to dementia advocate and researcher Andy Woodhead. You know, there's a lot going on there, Andy, isn't there, and involved in all that, and a lot going on in Wales as well. You've got the draft dementia strategy for Wales, 26 to 36. There was a statistic I saw that Wales has the lowest rate of dementia diagnosis in the UK, just 56%, evidently.
Yeah. Still the biggest killer of people. However, yes, I've got no idea why that would be. And I don't think there's necessarily been any research. We'd be guessing, wouldn't we, if we did that. I've got my own ideas, but they're ideas about, you know, why that might be. I think we've got less heavy industry now. The coal mines have gone. We've got electronics and things like that. So I think pollution levels have changed, and I don't think they have helped us over the years in terms of dementia. But again, that's me talking from my own ideas. It's nothing to do. I couldn't say there's been any research that has justified that. Certainly the care in Wales has improved, but it's still unpaid carers that provide, I believe, 97% of the care that is given to people with dementia comes from the unpaid carer, which is usually the family. Yeah. And I make a number of keynote speeches for different charities and universities, and I always highlight the fact that the carers need as much attention as the person with dementia. If someone in your family is living with dementia, you're all living with dementia. As the journey progresses, I'm sure it must get more difficult for the carer. And of course, there are decisions to be made down the line, like, do I want to go into a care home? Do I want to stay in my own home? I think most people want to stay in their own homes for as long as possible. And what we really need is the facilities in the community to enable us to be able to do that and enable our carers to be able to cope with us in those later stages of dementia, because dementia is a journey. My cognitive abilities are still pretty good. My research, I find, is my brain training. So it's like word search or crosswords and things like that. But I have always been someone who's read non-fiction rather than the novels. So, for me, it's something which has sort of come naturally. But all the other symptoms that go with dementia, which people don't necessarily recognize, they think it's only or mostly about memory, which it isn't. I think I've broken more bones than a jockey through falls, and that's entirely due to the dementia. Received some really good specialist physiotherapy to help with that, which is to strengthen its lower body strength. If you can get your lower body strength improved, it does help with things like balance issues. Because with me, it's not that I don't have the strength in my limbs. With me, it's the balance part of the brain. Also, it's frontal lobe, so frontal temporal lobe, I believe, and which is the sort of the social filter, executive planning, those sorts of things. For example, I can't cook a meal. I used to love to be able to do that. I can't, because I can't get things timed right, and when I should be putting water into a sauce, but I'm not. So I actually bought a slow cooker several years ago, thinking, well, that's going to make life easy. And we all went out as a family, expecting to come back to a nice warm meal, and I forgot to switch the slow cooker on, so it was like someone had to start again. But I can talk from two perspectives, one having dementia and one having cared for someone with dementia. My mother, after my father died when my mum was quite young. Mum was 59 when my dad died. She had all sorts of health problems, and was a heavy smoker, so I couldn't have her to live in the same house as me and the rest of the family. So I bought a house. I live in Ogmore-by-Sea, which is halfway between Swansea and Cardiff, on the coast, and managed to buy a house that I could convert with a granny flat. So Mum came over for 2 weeks to see if she would like it. She came for the Wimbledon fortnight because tennis was her, sport of choice, tennis and snooker, really. And she never went back. Mum died, sadly, of COVID, late in the COVID pandemic, but she had been diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and she was a type 1 diabetic. So she had all sorts of, sort of prerequisite conditions, which is what I try and tell. I teach medical students and AHPs, the allied health professions, which everything from physio to dietitians, really. I teach them that they're probably going to be treating somebody not for their dementia, but for a co illness, but they'll have dementia. It's statistically highly likely that they will. So I try and teach some of the do's and don'ts in terms of, caring for people with dementia, i.e., always smile, always give your name. We read faces in many things. Non-verbal communication becomes very, very important, and also not to approach people from behind if you can help it, simply because you will agitate them before you start. And I always say, sit on the bed and talk to them about something. Find out one thing about them that's been of interest. And I always get similar responses. We don't have time to do that. And I say, you do, because you're making more time for yourself, because the patient will become less agitated, Will give you less time running to the patient every time, you know, they're screaming for help or something like that. You're working smarter, not working harder. Yeah. So, you know, I try and do that. And that comes as part of my interest in patient-centered care. So it's not just for dementia patients, but other patients with other mental health conditions as well.
I resigned myself to staying as the years became a blur. Felt like nothing really moved me, nothing made me stir. But you came out of the darkness and you took hold of my life. And there ain't nothing like a woman to change your mind. I was born right here in England, in a small town by the Ouse. Never felt I did belong there. Couldn't wait till I cut loose. Ended up here in the city, one more slave to the same grind. But there ain't nothing like a woman to change your mind. The pages of those books that I was reading, and in every song I wrote, there was some part of you breathing. Some of my heart a little alone, and I thought I was that kind. But there ain't nothing like a woman to change your evening. And the fairground gates have closed. I've been walking around for hours, wondering which way I will go. This is a country I was raised in, never thought I'd leave behind. But there ain't nothing like a woman to change your mind. Change your mind.
Nothing Like a Woman from Dan Razza. Got plenty of great guests lined up, but there is always room for you to tell your story on the D Word. Our email is tdwradio@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Someone who did just that is this week's guest, Andy Woodhead. you know, what comes across from all of that, Andy, is that the real importance of lived experience. Now, you know, I can remember right at the beginning when I was doing this show about 6-7 years ago, I got invited to a few meetings, Dementia Action Alliances, and I looked around the room, and the first one I went, somebody said, anybody got any questions? I said, yeah, isn't there someone missing? And everybody looked at me, and I said, well, someone living with dementia. Surely we shouldn't be telling people living with dementia what they want. They should be telling us.
Yes, that's an argument I'm afraid that I have to have on numerous occasions, not just with research projects, but with some charities too, who think that consultation is the same as co-production, which it isn't. So, I mean, a questionnaire... that's co-production, they say. No, it's not. Co-production is a relationship of equals. So you've got your experts clinically and in care, but of equal importance, which, as you mentioned, is someone with lived experience. So you're in a relationship of equals. And I would say, if anything, the lived experience is... sometimes more important, depending on the particular study. And I used to think that clinical studies were particularly studies that look for curative treatments or treatments to slow down a condition needn't involve people with dementia. It would be difficult. Lived experience would have no value. Well, I've changed my mind on that one. I seriously think that's something they should have a voice in. And of course, there was the recent drug, wasn't there, which you could have, but you needed to pay for it, and you had to go for these scans on a regular basis. Now, NICE sort of did a halfway house on that one. And I think it would probably have been better if it had been held back for a while, because it's given people false hope and only 2 months extra, which means a lot. I think if you get a voice that can be objective, because, I mean, I just want a cure. Give me a cure. Give me it now. I want it today. But if you can get an objective voice who understands, you know, the different routes that are being taken. In Australia, they're looking at things like ultrasound to unblock the synapses, because it's basically protein buildups, isn't it, between synapses. And they're looking at ultrasound in Australia do that. So far, they've only done tests on laboratory rodents, but you know, it's an interesting concept. And again, it's not a drug therapy as such, but it's tackling what the drugs are trying to tackle as well, because we need to clear the synapses with a lot of dementias. Alzheimer's is something which obviously is the most common one, which is something which is, I think, a little different. But you will know, Pete, as well as me, there are over 100 different types of dementia, and to find the one magic pill that will work for all of them isn't possible. But I'm pleased to say that they're all being looked at, and especially for younger people. I think it's very sad now to see how many footballers, rugby players, are developing dementia at a very early age through concussion that was ignored, really. They would play on, whereas now they are sent off. But we knew about concussion and its effects. Gosh, when I was a child, with boxers, they called it being punch drunk. But it wasn't. It was dementia caused through continuous concussion whilst playing the sport, which is why I think the helmets are pretty good, but they're not going to help much, because the problem is the brain bounces inside the skull, so you're bruising both ends. So I think we need to have a rethink in terms of sports. I know that for young people now, when they play rugby, they call it touch rugby, so that we haven't got children, you know, being tackled, hard tackled. And the football isn't what it used to be. It used to be leather, which when it got wet would weigh an absolute ton, whereas now it's a completely different story. So heading the ball isn't perhaps as big a problem as it used to be. But there are all sorts of things like that which need to be looked at carefully.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a story we're following closely on the show. Actually, 1926 was the first time they identified what they called dementia pugilistica, which was associated with boxing. So, like you say, you know, that knowledge has been around for a very long time. I guess with all these things going on, you know, we've got great research going on and that kind of thing. But I've got to say, still, at the other end of the scale, I'm being asked probably daily almost, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? So we've got this whole kind of public approach. Now, I know we've got a major story in a soap opera, EastEnders, which is trying to deal with it. But, you know, there's a lot of work to be done at that end, isn't there?
Yeah, I wrote an article, actually, about that particular storyline, which was for Dementia UK. And it was subsequently published in the Daily Mirror and the Metro. To talk about early onset dementia, and I did highlight the fact that there would have to be artistic license, which there always is, whenever they've done it, for example, in other soaps, because they have a similar storyline in Coronation Street, don't they? Which is good publicity for the condition. However, they have to use artistic license and speed up the progress of the condition. So I wanted to make that clear in my article that, you know, that they will do that, and they have. The guy in EastEnders is now going into a home, and it progressed very quickly. And I don't think people should read anything into that. That isn't necessarily how the dementia will develop, particularly early onset dementia. And I know so many people with dementia who lead really, better lives with the condition than they would have been able to, many, many years ago. My grandmother, she died of, they called it, she died of old age, but she didn't. She was senile, which was dementia. So she had a form of dementia that they were unable to diagnose. I'm talking about 55 years ago that she died. And I've also lost two of my, that was my father's mother, two of my father's sisters had dementia as well. But there is no proof, as far as research goes, that it's necessarily hereditary. They haven't found the dementia gene yet, so that's good news. So not something that people need to concern themselves with. I just think it's a fact of nature that the brain will age like the body will age, but maybe in a different way. I know a lot of people now that obviously dementia is the umbrella term, isn't it? I think that's what you're alluding to, Pete, with everybody thinks Alzheimer's is dementia. It's not. That's the umbrella term. And there are quite a few people, I'm not one of them, who don't like the term dementia, simply because it comes from, I think it's Greek word, demented, isn't it? And they don't think it helps the stigma attached to dementia. And there is stigma. It's not, dare I say, the aggressive sort of stigma that was attached to things like leading a gay life years ago, when you would face violence. Dementia is far more subtle, I think. I think when you decide that you're going to tell people, particularly friends, that you have dementia, you see them a little less often, perhaps. It's that sort of thing. And also, dare I say, without the appropriate training, that can be something which you experience in a hospital as well, in a hospital environment. Some medics don't have the patience, or they will say the time to repeat themselves or explain things in a different way simply because someone has dementia and doesn't understand them. Well, sadly, they have to. If they're going to do the job properly, that's something that they have to do. And I have no sympathy at all with those sorts of excuses. What I will say is, the NHS was developed for us, and the words were from cradle to grave. And you have to be equally aware of curative treatments as well as managing people who are terminal and coming towards the end of their lives. So I think that's something which is critical.
Yeah, I think that's it's a very good point to make at the end, because we are sadly running out of time. But in terms of dementia strategy, want to get you back on the show maybe in 6 months' time when that's kind of...
That would be great.
Yeah, anytime. Once the consultation's gone through and it's kind of stuck in there. It'd be really good to talk to you again about that, Andy. But for now, anyway, it's been fascinating. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you for having me on, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much to Andy. Fascinating to learn about everything he's involved in and the really good works that are taking place in Wales. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be chatting to Michael Booth, who's turned his first-hand experience into a new dementia-based mystery novel. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.